I'm going to start by sharing a story with you, a story that happened to me, and it's a story that I'll never forget. And I need some help here today, especially from the children. So children, be listening to the story, and at a certain point in the story, I'm going to quite abruptly stop, and I'm going to continue the story at the end. So I'm going to have you remind me where we left off. So this story happened almost exactly 2 years ago. It was springtime, so it wasn't quite 2 years ago. And as some of you may know, I like to sell things, buy things, and sell them. It's just kind of something I enjoy. Something that I've done quite a bit of is sell zero-turn lawnmowers. I haven't sold quite as many as Byron, but I have always liked buying zero-turn mowers and washing them, maybe fixing some small things on them, and then reselling them after I use them for a while and see if I want to keep it or not. So I've done that a few times. At this particular time, I was selling a zero-turn lawnmower. And this was a mower I had longer than any other mower. I was actually starting to get kind of attached to it. But there was another mower that I wanted, so I decided I'd sell it. And this situation was I posted it for sale on Facebook, and that usually works pretty good. So I put the price on there and everything. And it wasn't too long that somebody messaged me, and we're gonna call this man's name Michael. So Michael messaged me and he asked for my phone number, which is somewhat uncommon actually. So I was like, huh, interesting. So I gave him my phone number. Believe it or not, most people, that's not the first thing they ask for on Facebook messaging. Unless they've never used a smartphone in their life, and it's their kid usually messaging me and wanting the phone number. So then a 70-year-old man will call me usually. So in this case, I gave him my number, and I was like, okay. And usually I look at the profile picture of the person who is messaging me about it. And I did that just briefly. I glanced at the profile picture. And this guy, Michael, first reaction, when I looked at his face, he looked like a druggie. Okay, so like I spent like 8 seconds probably looking at his face, and that's exactly what I thought. It's like, okay. Pretty soon my phone rings, and I answer it. And Michael sounded like a druggie. He sounded very much like a druggie. I probably could only understand 10% of his words, what he said. And finally, we got established a time for him to come look at it, and I was able to message him my address then. I had a very difficult time understanding what he was saying. And so as I hung up after this very long phone conversation where very little actually got communicated, and I was like, this is going to be an interesting time. So he was supposed to meet me, I believe that was a Saturday morning, and I think he came that same day. He was supposed to meet me at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I think I told him, would work for me. Now, it was a beautiful day. I had a lot planned that day. I had some cool things I was going to do, and 1 o'clock came, and no Michael. And he was from Kingston area. Those of you who don't know where Kingston is, it's up where Brian Slack is from in that area, Harriman. And so I know from experience that that's 50-minute drive, maybe an hour if you're taking it slow. And he had actually messaged me around noon, about 1 o'clock, and said he was already on the way. So I thought that surely he'd be there by now. No Michael. So I messaged him maybe 10 minutes after 1 o'clock and said, hey, just curious where you are. And he didn't reply for a little while, and then he did reply and basically said the same thing, that he's on his way. Okay, so Michael's on his way. I waited till approximately 1:30, I think. Still no Michael. And I remember telling Shanna before this even happened how interesting this could be, because this guy just looked like an interesting guy, and I basically thought he was a druggie. Finally, I was this close to calling him and saying, listen, Michael, I've got a really busy afternoon, okay? Like, I'm sorry, but if you're just not going to come, I'm not going to stick around, because I had another appointment I had to be at around 2 o'clock. My life is just too busy for this situation to happen. I'd love to sell the mower, but I'm sure it'll sell. I've got other people interested. We'll just talk to you later, Michael. And I was that close to doing that. And guess who pulls in? I think it was 1:50, so he's 50 minutes late. 10 till 2. I see his truck pull up. Had a small, one of the smallest trailers I've ever seen, right behind it. But the truck was beautiful. It was probably a $60,000 truck. It was a Chevy. It was nice. Custom rims and everything. Michael pulls up, and he pulled into my driveway slower and more methodically than I've ever seen anybody pull in. Like, there must not have been a car all the way up at the top of the hill, because it would have been having to hit his brakes, because it took him that long to pull into my driveway. And I was just like, I've just not really had an experience like this. This guy just is interesting. And so he pulls slowly into my driveway and literally creeps down the hill. So slow, I just about couldn't stand it. I was standing there just like waiting for him to come. And that's where we'll stop the story for now. We'll come back to it. We're going to look at the story, multiple stories, multiple scriptures today, which I typically don't like to do, but in this case, we're going to do it. We're going to look at multiple different scriptures, so have your Bibles ready. The first one we're going to look at briefly is the account where David is anointed king. So I'm going to pull a Carl on you. So turn to the account when David is anointed as king. Okay, so it's 1 Samuel 16. I figure most of y'all were probably in Samuel. 1 Samuel 16. And watch what Samuel's reaction is here. And you might have guessed what I'm going to be speaking about today. If not, you're going to be even closer after we read this account. So basically we have Samuel coming to, God tells him to anoint a king over Israel. And Samuel makes his way to Jesse. And we'll start in verse 6. 1 Samuel 16, verse 6. This is talking about Jesse's sons. When they came out, he looked on Eliab and thought, surely the Lord's anointed is before him. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not look on his appearance or on his height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. Samuel took one look at this option number one, and he says, wow, this looks like a king to me. Like, I think we're good to go. And God says, no, not him. So we continue reading. Then Jesse called Abinadab and made him pass before Samuel. And he said, neither has the Lord chosen this one. Then Jesse made Shammah pass by, and he said, neither has the Lord chosen this one. And Jesse made seven of his sons pass before Samuel. And Samuel said to Jesse, the Lord has not chosen these. Then Samuel said to Jesse, are all of your sons here? He said, there remains yet the youngest, but behold, he is the keeper of the sheep. Samuel said to Jesse, send and get him, for we will not sit down until he comes. And he sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy and had beautiful eyes and was handsome. And the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is he. So at first glance, we see that Samuel did not necessarily have this in mind. We definitely see that Jesse did not have it in mind, even more so. Poor David wasn't even invited to the party. But the Lord had something else in mind. He did not seem like a kingly stature, maybe. It just did not strike people as being the next king. So what I'm going to talk about today can be described by a few different words. It's kind of a broad subject that we're tackling. So I'm going to be talking about stereotyping, negative stereotypes, jumping to conclusions, maybe some racism will come in here. Well, we're not going to talk about that much. I'm going to talk about predetermined ideas, judgment of others, and prejudice. Those are all things that would describe what we're going to be looking at today. So Samuel and Jesse had a stereotypical view of what a king would be. And David just really didn't enter their minds when it came to that. He was the youngest. When does that ever happen? And he was the keeper of the sheep. He was kind of the youngest and didn't even enter their minds. Later on in the Bible, there's another king on the earth that really broke the stereotype of what a king would be, and that was Jesus. Jesus broke the stereotype like never's been done before about what people thought of a king, what people thought of a rabbi. He did not act like your typical rabbi. So we're going to look at some of those examples. Jesus is our best example. But before we do get into that, I've got a couple questions here I want to ask. And I do invite your response on these questions. Does he want us to look at the outward appearance? Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. Now what if I said this? In comparison, does God want us to look at the outward appearance or at the heart? Yes. The answer is yes. Okay. Now, if we are going to be judging or placing a judgment call on somebody, like is stated here in 1 Samuel, I think we would all agree that he wants us to follow his example and look at a person's heart. Correct? I think we can all agree on that. Okay? Where in Scripture is looking outwardly when placing that judgment on somebody given a higher priority than looking at their heart? Anybody have any scriptures in that? I'm speaking in a positive way. There's negative examples of this, but in a positive way, I could not think of any times in Scripture where when looking on somebody, when in witnessing situations, in pretty much any situation, you name it, looking on outward appearance versus looking at the heart, the Lord always encourages to look at the heart. If you find any, let me know. I would be interested in that. But I believe that's the way it is. So if there's nowhere in Scripture where it's prioritized over looking at the heart, then why do we do it? Placing any sort of judgment on a person without knowing or having reason based on a heart condition or a heart issue is a sin, I believe, and is wrong. So that takes us to a couple of definitions. Let's look up some definitions. We have the definition of prejudice. Let me get that for you. Definition of prejudice: preconceived opinion that is not based on reason or actual experience. So the word preconceived is in that definition. Let's define that. Preconceived is an idea or opinion formed without having the evidence for its truth or usefulness. So basically, when we talk about stereotypes, it involves that. Now, stereotyping can be, usually when we hear the word stereotype, we think negative, okay? It's kind of like a negative thing. Okay, stereotyping, the actual stereotype definition is a widely held view of a person or people group or thing. So stereotype doesn't have to be negative. It actually can be a positive thing, very much so. So we're going to get into some examples of that. So let me ask you a question. What is one negative stereotype about Christians? Can you think of any?
Take that question.
Hadn't thought of that one. That's good. What else?
Intolerant.
It's really close to what I was thinking. Yes. Anything else? Judgmental. Okay, Reagan, that's the one I thought about the most. So if you would go on a Facebook forum, let's say, and there's a conversation about any host of things, and you start commenting and saying, well, you know, I believe that the Bible says this about that, and you can do it in like the 100% most truthful way, a loving way even, which is hard to do when just typing on Facebook, or like it's kind of up to them how they take it, but it will not take long at all, and somebody will comment underneath and say, well, Christians are judgmental, you're being judgmental. It really won't take long at all. Okay, so those are a few that y'all mentioned. It's important for us to think about that. As you go about your life, you're carrying a little bit of that stereotype. Doesn't mean that you've, literally, you could have never done it in your life, but you're carrying a little bit of that stereotype. And so we have to be aware of that as we go about our lives. And what needs to be one of our priorities is breaking that stereotype. Just like Jesus broke the stereotype of his day and age, we're not Jesus, okay? I get that. But we can break the stereotype and treat people in a loving way. And now there's still going to be people who don't, you could tell them anything you want and they will still be angry at you, okay? I get that. But that is between them and God, okay? We need to not live up to that negative stereotype. We need to completely prove it wrong. Okay, so Jesus didn't stereotype. He broke the stereotypes for rabbis and kings. So if you want two main points that I want you to think about today, two main things are going to come, almost both of these are showed in almost every example I bring up. And that is pursue the heart of the person and show your heart to the person. Pursue the heart and show your heart. So just recently, I went out and looked at a job site, and I meet a lot of different customers, so many different varieties of people. You guys see so many people throughout a day. You interact with them. This particular situation, I talked to the guy on the phone. He sounded great, very, very friendly guy. I went out and met at the job site with him. And I'm ashamed to say that from the first second I saw him, my mind traveled, and it shouldn't have. This is actually what got me thinking about sharing this. When I saw him and started talking to him, I thought this man was gay. I really did. And then, as I got to know him, found out he's not gay. And he's actually a very nice man. We actually are good friends. He was just a little bit different than I was used to. But like, what was wrong with me? Like, he wasn't... Like, it was a terrible thing for me to just jump out of the gate and think about this guy. And so I was confessing that here this morning, and that's what I'm talking about. It's so easy to do. We've probably all done that in some shape or form, and it's a very, very negative thing, and Jesus didn't do that. And so we'll look at some examples now of that. Some of my favorites, there's many of them. One that many of y'all probably thought about already is in John chapter 4, if you want to turn there. John chapter 4, and this is the story of the woman at the well. John chapter 4, verse 7. I want to just read a few of these verses, bring out some interesting things here. A woman from Samaria came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." For the disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. The Samaritan woman, who seemed very surprised by this, said to him, "How is it that you, a Jew, ask for a drink from me, a Samaritan woman?" There's two different variables here. For one thing, she was a woman. Back then, there was some prejudice against women. But even more so than that, she was from Samaria, which was a huge no-no. You just did not go up and talk to Samaritans if you were a Jew. And then it says, in my Bible, it says in parentheses, for Jews had no dealings with Samaritans. And then we know the dialogue where Jesus talks with her and prophesies to her. She's very amazed. So this is a classic situation where Jesus totally broke the stereotype of being a Jew, rabbi, king, you name it. He broke it right here. She was blown away by this. And I'm really blessed by the impact that this made in this woman's life and how so easily that opportunity could have been missed if you follow the stereotypical view that's held around you. And others were amazed like that Jesus was doing these things. It was just different. And we need to have the freedom to take those opportunities, even when it's maybe in society it wouldn't be viewed as a very comfortable situation. It's a great opportunity. And part of the results of that are found later down in verse 39. It says, many Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. So it's a pretty amazing story that Jesus saw this great opportunity. In fact, it wasn't like Jesus picked and chose opportunities. He just, boom, accepted them instantly, no matter what opportunity kind of faced him. And so it was a good challenge for me to seize those opportunities, not get hung up on society, what the norm is. Okay, in John chapter 7, verse 24, Jesus' words. Now this is talking more about judging. Now there's a huge debate about judging throughout Christians mostly, about when do you judge, how do you judge, do you never pronounce judgment at all on a person? I can tell you what I believe about it. You can place judgment on a person based on their heart, yes. And if you judge rightly. But it's a very sobering thing to do, okay? The verse says that you will be judged by the same measure that you judge. Doesn't say, like, that it's outlawed, but be careful, very careful. You're going to be judged by the same measure that you place your judgment. So it's a very serious thing. And in this verse, this is after a long story of the Pharisees being annoyed at the guy on the Sabbath walking with his bed after Jesus had healed him. And it comes kind of all crashing down into these moments where Jesus is speaking to them. And he says, do not judge by appearances, but judge with right judgment. So he's saying, go a little bit deeper. Like, let's not just stay on the surface here. Let's go a little bit deeper. Obviously, we have to make judgment calls. We really do. For the safety of ourselves and our families, we can place judgment calls very, very serious, as I said, based on the Bible and what Scripture says. But judging by appearances is not the right way of judging, as Jesus says there. Okay, in Matthew, if you want to turn to Matthew 9, verse 10, another example of Jesus breaking the stereotype around him. This is after Jesus called Matthew, the tax collector, to follow him. And 9, verse 10 in Matthew says, and Jesus reclined at the table in the house. Behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and reclined with Jesus and his disciples. So, for one thing, for Jesus to call a tax collector as a disciple was probably very unheard of. I don't know the history if it's ever happened, but I'm going to guess it was very rare that a rabbi would call a disciple who's a tax collector. But look at the huge opportunity that it opened up. Pretty soon, he's reclining with them. And many tax collectors were there, so his buddies came around. And then it says, and when the Pharisees saw this, they said to his disciples. So some of Jesus' other disciples, they didn't really quite go straight to Jesus, but they're kind of talking behind his back a little bit with this with this issue, and they said, "Why does your teacher teach, and why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" And when Jesus, when the word came around to Jesus, he says, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick, go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice, for I came not to call the righteous, but sinners." These are kind of uncomfortable situations, and sometimes they're not always fun for us to kind of jump into. We would rather, it's a lot more comfortable sometimes to be like, "Well, that's really out of the ordinary. I don't think I want to mess with that. It's probably going to be a little messy, so I don't really want to mess with that. And who's going to look at me weird if I do that?" But Jesus wasn't afraid to do that, and we need to follow his example. My favorite, I think all-time favorite here, example of Jesus doing this is in Mark 5. And there's multiple accounts of this, but this is the one that we're going to read. This is where Jesus is, if you read the story before, like the chapters before, I get the feeling that Jesus is a little bit exhausted at this point. It's when he crossed the sea, and it's when he calls the demon out of the man. So we'll start in verse 2. "And when Jesus had stepped out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit, and he lived among the tombs. And no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain, for he had often been bound with shackles and chains and tore the chains apart, he broke the shackles into pieces. No one had the strength to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always crying and cutting himself with stones." So if I look at the situation of this man from my human eyes, I would say, "Wow, that poor man, like, he's really lost it. I'm not going to go really over there. Definitely not going to take my family over there," which is not a bad idea. But what it says in, and if we keep reading here, I don't think it says it in this account. In one of the other Gospels, I think it's Matthew, it says that nobody went near the place. Nobody even came close to the place because this man. But Jesus did. He came close, and he prayed to God and actually spoke directly to the demon and told him to leave. Now, what strikes me about this story is that when all others had really not given this man much of a chance with them, Jesus did so. And when it says that nobody went near the place, I had to think about us. So as a church, or me, if this was a situation and my church was close by, would we just avoid that place altogether? Or would we go and pray for this man? Jesus saw the heart of this man. He was a man. This was not a demon. It was a man possessed with a demon. This is a human being. And he saw straight to his heart. He actually cared about the man. And he didn't do it just to got a victory over those demons type of a thing where I'm going to show my power and launch these guys into pigs. He cared for the man and the change that comes over the man after they're gone is amazing. So it's a challenge to me. Would I even go and pray for this man? Would I dare get close enough to even pray? And it doesn't appear that anybody had done that, which is really sad. One more in John 9. Now I mentioned preconceived ideas. This is a good example of what is so easy to do. You remember my story where Michael, I saw what he looked like. I couldn't understand much of what he was saying. And I was starting to form some ideas about how this was going to go and what this guy was like. In this story, John chapter 9, verse 1, "And he passed by and saw a man blind from birth, and his disciples asked him, 'Rabbi, who sinned that this man or his parents, that he was born blind?'" And Jesus rebuked his disciples multiple times for for seemingly not even as bad of things as this, but he didn't actually rebuke them terribly here. But he says basically that it was not this man that sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed. They assumed just like out of the gate what had happened to this guy. Like somebody must have sinned, right, to make this happen. And that was wrong for them to do that, I believe. But it's so easy to do. He pursued their heart and in the process broke the stereotype of typical rabbis and showed his heart to them. And there's many more stories about this, how he was so kind to those around him that most people were not giving a chance. Okay, where are we at in our story? One of the children? Anybody know? Do you remember Zadok? Yeah, I was waiting for him to come down. Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of awkward because I was there for like 30 seconds and he was not that far away. And I'm like waiting. He's coming down the driveway. So Michael finally arrives. Michael is there, and he pulled straight in, so his trailer's kind of facing back up toward Highway 30 at my driveway. And so I was like, walk up to the door, and the door opens up. Michael gets out. Very, very slender man. And I can still picture all of this just so clearly. He steps out, and he had some tattoos, I believe, on his arms, and I think he had one on his neck. So I noticed those pretty much first thing. And very skinny arms, almost like unhealthy skinny. And so I go up and I'm like, yeah, nice to meet you. And I stick out my hand. And he sticks out his hand and he's going like this. And we finally grasped hands and we shook hands. I felt like I'd about shake his hand off. Like if I had, like it was just, he was weak, like very weak. And he started talking, and I can understand him a little bit better than when we were talking on the phone. So he started talking, and I won't try to imitate how he sounded, but sounded a little bit like he was high, like just really quick and choppy, like a little bit choppy with like how he was speaking. And another thing that I noticed almost right off the bat is that he could not make eye contact very well. The reason being is because one of his eyes was facing forward, and the other one was kind of shooting off at like a 15-degree angle, which was a little strange. And so I was like kind of taken back by the whole thing. And so we walk in to my garage and look at the mower. And he's looking at it, and it became apparent in about 7 or 8 seconds that he knew nothing about small engines, mowers, equipment, nothing. I mean, as much as a very small child would know. He was asking me questions about the thing that I had never been asked about a mower before. Very common knowledge things, but he just didn't know. And so I told him, I answered his questions and everything, and he looked at it very briefly, like very briefly, and I didn't even start it for him. Okay, yeah, he'll buy it. He wants it. He's going to buy it. I'm like, okay, sounds good to me, so let's do this, and we'll be... I was ready to wave goodbye to this guy a little bit. I was just not too sure what he was up to. And so he's like, okay, so he's looking at his truck and everything. And I briefly, at this point, he briefly said that, because I think I said, hey, it's a pretty nice truck you have. Oh, yeah, it was a birthday gift from my wife that he gave to him. So I was like, whoa, that's a nice gift. And then, he was looking, and I could tell he was contemplating a little bit, and he studied it for like 15 seconds. He's like, you know what? It's going to be hard for me to like get back on the road like being in here this way. Like I need to be turned around. I'm like, I agree. So he gets in his truck, and I was like, well, if you back up, and I've done this many times, you can back up to the corner of my, put your trailer kind of on the grass, and you can actually turn around right there in my little space. There's not much room, but you can do it. Okay, so he gets in. And he tries for the life of him to back this truck, and I've never seen anybody. It was very sad how he could not back this truck, like, terribly. And he, I mean, he'd go 3 feet and had to pull forward, and it just was not working well at all. So he gets out, and he's like, hey, can you back the truck and turn it around? So I got in there, backed it up, and turned it around, flipped it back. Okay, so he's like, thank you, thank you. And this whole time, I thought that this man was a druggie. In fact, I was very sure at this point that he was a druggie. And I wasn't sure what he was. He was kind of looking around in my shop with my tools, and I just wasn't too into him being around very much longer. So he's like, so I want everything. So we go in, and my little workbench there, he left his cash in the truck. So he goes out, and he literally comes back with a armload of cash. Like, not quite an armload, but like two hands had to wrap around this cash, $100 bills, all of it. And so my whole drug dealer thing was really coming true. And so he begins to come out, and some of them were extremely loose and like tangled and almost ripped, like terribly. And he's like, oh, my daughter was playing with these again, I bet. And he pulls them back, and I was thinking, I'm like, that's different. And so that's not usually your toy. And so he's like, yeah, she tangles them up and everything. But in the middle of it all was a whole wad about an inch and a half thick that was clipped together with one of those money clips that I always thought are cool, but I've never had one. But so money clip on those. So he like kind of puts everything down on this pile on my workbench and pulls the money clip off. And at this point, the story changes. He pulls the money clip off, and this image is seared in my mind. I don't think this will ever come out. I hope it never leaves my mind. He pulls the money clip off, and it falls. He drops it because he was shaking. And he drops it, and it falls to the concrete floor. And it bounces and tings around because it's metal. And it kind of goes underneath something. And he instantly exclaims, oh, no, no. He's like, I can't lose that. I can't. Cannot lose that. And he gets down on the floor and starts looking for it, and it wasn't that far away, and he finds it and pulls it up. And he says, yeah, my daughter gave this to me. She had it custom made, and it was very sweet looking, actually. It had engravings in it, and it had his name, and it said it was from his daughter. And he said, yeah, oh, I would not want to lose this. Like, it means so much to me. And I was like, wow, really? That's cool. And so he's like, yeah. He's like, actually, he's like, I'm just so grateful to have my family. He's like, I'm so grateful that my wife didn't leave me. So grateful that she stuck with me through my entire story. And so at this point, I like took a look, like, I was like, well, what happened? Like, what is your story? And he said it was a very simple, simple operation. It was very common. I went to the dentist. He had some sort of infected tooth, and I won't get all the medical terms right of what he told me. He said, I went to the dentist, and they did something wrong with my tooth, and my jaw got infected. And I could see there was a little scar, like, kind of underneath, and they had to operate on his jaw. And the infection apparently spread like crazy. And he said, yeah, it got worse. He's like, I went and had a couple operations there on the infected tooth and the jaw. And he's like, none of it should have happened. It was just kind of a freak thing. And then to make matters worse, he's like, I didn't think it could get any worse. In one of the operations, one of the doctors gave me the wrong medication. And he said, it really messed me up. He said, because of the medication and something with the surgery, apparently, I won't have all the medical terms right, like I said. He said, I had a brain aneurysm and almost died. And it was only like, I think it was maybe a year or two before then. He's like, I had a brain aneurysm. I was in the hospital for a long time. I almost died. And he's like, my wife and child stuck with me through it all. And he's like, and this is the result. And he's like shaking. He's like, this is what happened to me after the brain aneurysm. He's like, I used to be a framer. I used to be in construction. He's like, I loved it. Absolutely loved it. Worked with a framing crew, and but he said, now I can't work. I can't, because, I mean, he's like, well, look at me. And at this point, I was like smacked in the face. I was just totally felt like so small. And he's like, but my last birthday, like my daughter gave me this money clip, and that just meant the world to him, like that he was reminded again that like how loyal his family is to him. And he's like, my life is just so different, but they've stuck with me through it all. And he said, money's not an issue, like money's no problem. He's like, the doctors gave me so much money from all the errors that they made. But he's like, it was not worth it. Like, it was not worth it. He's like, people don't realize what all happened to me. And I will never forget those moments with him. And we're Facebook friends to this day, and he actually called me not that long ago. And it's just an example of, like, I thought so many wrong things about this guy ahead of time. I didn't know his story. I mean, we don't know people's story. And I don't know if he's 100% right with God. But what I'm struck with the challenge is how much grace we've been given. I mean, we've been given a lot of grace. I mean, we're just a few decisions away from being anybody. It's so important that we don't place that judgment on somebody before we know the facts, like before we know what happened, or generalizing an entire people group. I had to think about Middle Easterns or Muslims. After 9/11, any sort of terrorist attack you ever hear about, or anybody who sees an Arab kind of thinks about that, like the Middle Eastern, like, well, they're terrorists. And that's just not true. I mean, it's not. Not all of them are terrorists. And so we need to be careful. And so what I thought about is, with these generalizations and everything, I thought about why. Why am I doing that? And what's important, actually? Is it even, what am I accomplishing by doing that? Ultimately, really, what am I accomplishing? By thinking that this person's this or that, is like, ahead of time. The fact is, you're accomplishing nothing, absolutely zero. Maybe it makes you feel good, or like you want to talk. Like, that would be probably my weakness. And talk about that for a second. It's even worse to stereotype somebody behind their back, I think. Like, it turns into gossip pretty quick, and you feel like you got that person figured out or something, but you don't know them. Like, if it's somebody you just don't know, like, it's terribly, it's not a nice thing to do. And so, yeah, that was the biggest question to me is why? Why do I do it? Like, why would I do it? Is there even any reason to do it? I don't think that there really is. Instead, we need to look at the person's, look at their heart, get to know them, find out some things, and then point them to Christ. Jesus went straight to their heart. He pursued their heart. And in the process of pursuing their heart, he showed his heart to them. And that's probably what struck me more than anything when I felt like I got slapped in the face with this whole story that I just told you. I wouldn't have wanted to show him my heart, really, at that moment. Like, what I thought about him, like, I wouldn't have really wanted him to see that, which is very sobering. That really struck me, that I need to be careful, because that's going to hinder my witness really quickly. If my heart is not right toward a person, or if we have prejudice, preconceived ideas, judging others before we know them. So it's more of a message of challenge, maybe. I've been wanting to share that story with you guys. A pretty life-changing story for me. I've still got tons to learn. I make mistakes all the time, so this was good for me to restudy some of this. It's not very easy for me to be bent. I mean, just it's human tendency to not default to these things, so we need to try really hard to give them to Christ.